You don't need special gadgets to be a hero. With unlimited 1.5% cash back on every purchase everywhere, the Capital One Quicksilver Card makes you the hero of every purchase. Whether it's headphones, a lounge chair, or even a well-deserved massage, whatever the Quicksilver purchase, you're the hero. No fighting bad guys, getting in epic car chases, or parachuting out of buildings required. Simple, isn't it? The Capital One Quicksilver Card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hey there, everybody. Here's some bonus stuff you should know. This time it's about traveling to Orlando for business. Orlando has tons of places to host your conferences and meetings. Dr. Michael Edwards, CEO of Ocean Insight, said it best. Orlando is as much a business capital as an entertainment one. And when the day is done, you can kick off each evening at one of 46 Michelin-rated restaurants. What's not to love? So check out Orlando, where the possibilities for business travel are unbelievably real. Learn more at OrlandoForBusiness.com. Hello, everybody. We have a book coming out. It's called Stuff You Should Know, An Incomplete Compendium of Mostly Interesting Things, and you can pre-order it now.
That's right. It would mean a lot if you supported this book. You're going to love it. It's really great. It looks great. It smells great. It reads great. And how about this? Why don't you support indie bookstores by going to indiebound.org? Or even better, why don't you support Black-owned businesses? Because we set up a little link, bit.ly/SYSKBLM. And order a book from those fine folks, why don't you?
That's right. So Stuff You Should Know, An Incomplete Compendium of Mostly Interesting Things is coming soon to change your life forever for the better.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, and there's Charles W. Chuck Bryant right there, and Jerry's out there somewhere. And this is Stuff You Should Know, the Fold and Tuck edition.
So Jerry's in her office now.
Yep.
I'm in the Stuff You Should Know studio.
That's right. You're in Florida.
You're at your home studio, or a home studio.
Right.
You got like eight of them.
Right.
You're like Elvis. Like,
right.
Which room is closest to me, baby? I'll just go in there.
Where we're recording from today, man.
And now Jerry is like a ghost in, haunting the computer in here, recording it remotely.
Right. She's like...
it's amazing.
Oh, what's that? Yeah, she's like a ghost. You said it best.
And she just texted me 2 minutes in and said, your levels are good, so...
That's great. Go back to sleep, Cheers.
Sounds about right.
So I was talking to Jerry earlier, and she just reminded me, we're talking origami today, she just reminded me that on my first trip to Japan, I brought her back a paper origami crane, and that she still has it. And I was thinking about that trip, Chuck, because on that trip, Yumi took me to Japan.
Remember when you guys liked each other, you and Jerry?
Yeah. We still do. It's that crane that's keeping us friends.
That's right.
But on that trip, one of the places Yumi took me was Hiroshima, right?
Sure.
And it is one of the neatest places I've ever been. I know I've talked about it before, but one of the things that you'll see there are just mounds and mounds of origami cranes.
Yeah.
Like cranes, like the bird.
Mm-hmm.
Basically the quintessential origami model.
Not like building cranes? That's not what they're folding?
You never can tell these days, you know. Bob the Builder had a pretty good run for a while there, so it could have been.
That's true.
But apparently one of the reasons you see those cranes is because there was a little girl from Hiroshima named Sadako Sasaki.
Oh, man, this story.
Yeah, I know. It's very sad. So she was, I think, two when the U.S. dropped the nuclear bomb on Hiroshima. And she was exposed to radiation at that tender young age and developed leukemia. And she died at age 12. But before she died, she started this project of folding 1,000 paper cranes in origami, which was kind of this long-standing thing that was associated with, like, good luck or honor or dignity. And hers was that there's another one that if you complete 1,000 cranes, you have a wish. And so this little girl, Sadako Sasaki, her wish was for world peace, but she died before she could complete the cranes, the 1,000 cranes.
And that is upsetting. But if to end it on a more heartwarming note, her classmates got together and folded the remaining cranes in her honor,
yeah.
And they were buried with her, which is at least a slightly uplifting ending.
Right. So when you go to Hiroshima today, at this peace memorial that they've built, like a whole section of the city where the bomb went off has just been turned into this anti-nuclear, anti-war peace memorial. There's just tons of cranes that were created by school children, kind of in honor of Sadako Sasaki and for this wish for world peace. And if you stepped out of the studio and followed me into the living room, you would see 1,000 paper cranes that Yumi folded just for me, too.
You know who here at work has done that?
Who?
Guess.
You.
No, no. Which one of your colleagues do you think would do this?
I don't know, man. I honestly don't know. There's so many varied, complex, rich people that we work with that I can't even begin to guess. I'm going to hazard a guess and say Ben.
I could see Ben doing that.
What about the other Ben?
Probably not.
Okay.
Pam, Peacock.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Makes sense, huh? Our graphic designer, who is an artist, obviously. And I asked Pam, actually, if I could read her Facebook post when she completed it, because I think this is instructive on, and you tell me whether it jibes with Yumi's experience.
Okay.
Because it sort of is instructive on the art of origami, and it's more than just folding paper. It is meditative and it can be relaxing and healing and all those things. So Pam posted a photo of the final project and said, "This is what 1,000 origami cranes looks like and a pile on my coffee table. Tonight I met the goal on August 2nd, 2018, to fold 1,000 cranes within 1 year's time. There were several reasons I wanted to take on the challenge: the meditative quality of folding origami, to practice dexterity and fine motor skills, the fun in making a flat piece of paper into something dimensional and new. To make a whole bunch of something, there's a certain satisfaction in that. But the biggest reason was to cultivate more discipline within myself, to commit to a long-term ongoing project and see it through to completion is a big deal for me." And she goes on to say she has a pretty long history about getting pumped up about a project and then abandoning it. And she found with 2 months left, she only had she had 500 left to go.
Yeah.
So it took her 10 months. Well, I think she just took some time off.
Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, that's how you're supposed to do it. You're not supposed to just sit there and do it in one fell swoop. It kind of misses a bunch of the point, you know?
Yeah, she said that she went several months without it, realized she had a couple of months and the clock was ticking. Mm-hmm. And she said, "I made the decision to recommit and push myself instead of letting it go. Mm-hmm. Like so many other things, I know I'll still struggle with those issues, but as an exercise growth, I feel like I've leveled up a bit and continue applying these strength and skills to my art, personal, and professional lives."
Very nice. And she's like, "And check out my finger muscles."
That too.
They're ripped. Yeah, Yumi's middle name is Stick-to-itiveness, so I don't think she benefited in that sense, but there's definitely like a meditative aspect to it. And like when she was doing it for me, it was like, I thought it was very sweet. And then the more I learned about it, the sweeter I realized how, you know, it was. To do that for somebody is pretty cool. And to do it for yourself too, like Pam did, is pretty neat as well.
I think it was also for Yumi.
She, yeah, probably.
You know?
Yeah, I'm sure she got a tremendous amount out of it too, you know? But it was one of those things where she would just kind of work on it when she felt like it, you know? There wasn't any rush or anything like that. So it did have like kind of a meditative thing for her for sure.
I used to think stick-to-itiveness was a weird middle name, but when I saw it written down, like in the context of her name, it just, I don't know, it looked great.
You're like, "I've been pronouncing that Alice all these years."
That was so weird.
So Pam said something that I saw other people mention too about origami, is that it's transformative. Like she's taking a piece of paper and transforming it into something.
Yeah.
And there's this really amazing, so there's a definite Zen quality to origami paper folding, right? And there's a documentary out there called Between the Folds, and it's of course a PBS documentary, but it has this kind of Zen vibe to it too. It's really, really mellow and low key, but some of the stuff they're talking about and showing in there is just nuts. And I'll talk about it from time to time, but there's this one guy in there named Michael LaFosse, and he describes origami as a metamorphic type of art, where like with painting, you're adding paint, so it's an additive kind of art. With, you know, sculpting from like marble, it's a subtractive art. Mm-hmm. With paper folding and origami, you're taking the same thing, and it's the same thing that is the finished product. You're not adding to it or subtracting to it. It's still just a piece of paper, mm-hmm. but you're transforming it into something else. And that is kind of the essence of origami itself.
Yeah, this one was one that I was so sure that we had done it before because it's just smacks of stuff you should know. Yeah. We'd love to cover Japanese topics, first of all, but I don't know. It just felt like surely we've done this. And I had to look. I looked probably five different ways just to make sure that we hadn't done it.
You're like, what kind of smart way would we title this?
And well, that's what I thought. That was my fear, was that it would be like called Folding Madness or something stupid like that.
Did you search Folding Madness?
No, I just made that up. But
what if that's the one that we already released this under?
It did seem really familiar, but I think I'm probably just thinking about bonsai, maybe. Mm-hmm. Which I think is similar in a way, and not just because they're both Japanese disciplines, but I feel like the meditative quality and the care and the precision and the spiritual aspect, I think they have a lot of overlap there.
One of the big differences, though, is that that origami doesn't involve plant torture like bonsai does.
Well, in bonsai doesn't, there's no paper torture involved, so.
That's true. That's true. So when we talk about origami, we're actually talking about this. That is technically a subset of this larger thing that actually grew out of origami and ended up forming this kind of umbrella art form called paper folding, appropriately enough. But origami, everybody kind of associates that with Japan. And the weird thing is when we talk about origami, which, by the way, we haven't really said it, but it's taking usually one sheet of paper and folding it in certain ways
so that it
becomes some other representation of something else or a shape or something other than that. But the point of origami is that this shape or this new representation of like an animal or a person or something, it's all made just by a single sheet of paper typically and folding that paper. That's the whole key.
Yeah, and one of the other keys is that you're not gluing things, you're not cutting things. It's really just folding. And it can be very basic. I tried my hand at it today just to make some very basic things. Mm-hmm. And I definitely get the I get the meditative aspect, although I was just doing it to try and do something sort of quickly for work and not in the style that you would normally do origami.
Sure.
I could see how if you applied that at your house, put on some good music, maybe turn the lights down a little bit, mm-hmm. shut the door, keep your family far, far away. And your animals far, far away.
Sure.
I could see how it could accomplish that goal for me. I might start doing it some.
Hadn't thought about keeping the family far, far away because Yumi was, when she was folding that 1,000 cranes, I'd be like, what number are you on now? What number are you on now? Every yeah. time she folded a new one.
Yeah. I think she probably was just an autopilot.
What you doing?
Answering you.
What you doing over there? Is this a crane too? Are you making another crane?
Boy, I would yeah.
Yeah.
That would drive me nuts.
Yeah. So we should probably go over a few of the terms. The term itself, origami, they say comes from oru, which means to fold. Pretty smart. Mm-hmm. And then kami, which is paper. So orukami apparently was the original term for it. And it's kind of, I guess, just became origami, which as far as I could see, is actually not. It's not actually a word. It's kind of an offshoot of oru and kami.
Yeah, and if you go to, you can make origami out of anything. They talk about sticky notes and just copy paper, but you can actually buy kami, K-A-M-I, online if you want, or go into an art store these days. It might not be so easy to go into a store, but that's what it might be called. There are other kinds of paper that we'll talk about later, but paper is what you need if you want to be a paper folder. Mm-hmm. You don't need a bunch of other stuff, which is a very lo-fi art form. It's super cool in that way. And what you end up with is called a model. I guess you could call it an art piece or something if you're a little highfalutin, but they're really just called models.
Yes, that's any finished origami product is called the model. There's also, so this article says you need two things for origami. You need a sheet of paper and some imagination. But I would beg to differ. You don't even need imagination because there's so many what are called origami designs out there that are basically step-by-step illustrations of the different folds you need to make. So if you want to, say, make an origami donkey, you, as long as you have the paper in one of these designs, you don't have to have any imagination whatsoever.
Yeah, and when I was first reading this too, I thought, well, you need paper and fingers, but I realized that was quite ableist, actually.
Boo.
Because there is actually a style of origami from a British man named John Smith in the late 70s called Pure Land or Pure Origami that is very basic and was created in part so people who had some sort of physical impairment could still realize the joy and the meditative qualities of folding paper.
I saw that too. That was the one that appeals to me the most because it's so simple.
Yeah, same here.
Also, Chuck, did you know that the world's greatest archer is was born with no arms?
I think we talked about that, right?
I don't know.
On the Olympic torch thing? No?
No, definitely not. No, because I just saw it this past Sunday, so it's not possible we did. You just had a memory from the future. That's pretty impressive.
I'm in a Christopher Nolan movie.
So I can't wait, but I have to say, man, I am very disappointed to see movies starting to come out and the trailer saying only in theaters. I'm like, I didn't realize we were at that point again yet.
Well, I mean, his new movie Tenet is one of the, it was one of the big ones back in the early spring when they were like, he's going to put it out in theaters, even if he has to bump it a month or two. Like he's not going to do an at-home thing. He's not going to wait till next year.
Yeah.
And I think they're doing, like, pretty big-time spacing and stuff, but I ain't going to a movie theater.
No.
And it's one of my favorite places to go.
I know. Like we talked about the other day in sneezing, how it's just so great to go see a movie in the middle of the day, you know?
Yeah. Can you imagine seeing a movie now and you hear someone sneeze? Oh, I would be out of there so fast.
I'd just start crying on the way to the movie theater. I would not be at all comfortable about that right now.
So I think if... Actually, I think we should probably take a break. We've been yammering for 15 minutes.
Well, no, we've made it through the first two paragraphs.
So we'll come back after this and we'll talk about paper, very key to origami, right after this. Hey, everybody, Chuck here. Are you thirsty? Well, before you take a sip, have you stopped to think about what's in your water? Many conventional bottled waters contain PFAS, harmful substances known as forever chemicals.
Yeah, but you can drink water as clean as nature intended with Richard's Rainwater.
That's right. Richard's Rainwater collects 100% pure, refreshing drops of rain. Yes, it really is rain. Richard's Rainwater is caught clean before it hits the ground or becomes polluted with pesticides and contaminants that are commonly found in groundwater.
And since rain is naturally pure, there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. That means Richard's Rainwater contains no added fluoride, no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Just pure drops of rain.
That's right. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of Richard's still rainwater and the long-lasting cold pressured bubbles of Richard's sparkling rainwater. Perfect for sipping or mixing into your favorite cocktail. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. Enjoy pure, refreshing rainwater. Sip the sky.
Hey, everybody, we're here to tell you about Viator, a tool that you can use to plan and book travel experiences around the world.
That's right. The Viator app and website make it easy to explore 300,000 plus travel experiences so you can discover what's out there no matter where you're traveling or what you're interested in.
Yep, Viator can help you plan better travel experiences. 300,000 plus travel experiences to choose from means you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy.
That's right. You can also enjoy real traveler reviews to get insider information from people who've already been on the experience that you're considering. Plus, you get free cancellation that helps you plan for the unexpected.
Yeah, and Viator offers 24/7 customer service, so you know you'll get support at any hour if things aren't going as planned. So download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find the perfect travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
All righty. I teased paper.
You did. Paper doesn't like to be teased.
Paper did not like that. I thought about you earlier, by the way. Sidebar, I was watching some old Mitch Hedberg stuff. And I immediately was like, oh, man, Josh would love these.
Somebody wrote in to say, you guys, have you heard about, what was it? Was it based on a listener mail?
No, I don't know how. I think it was just in my feed on my Facebook page and just, I don't know, it popped up. It was so good. His joke about the belt and the belt loops.
I don't know about that one. What is it?
The belt is holding up the pants, but the belt loops hold up the belt. Who's the real hero here?
That guy was priceless, man.
So good. Yep. So paper is what you're going to need if you want to practice origami. And China invented paper in about 105 AD, but it was a luxury item. They weren't so much into folding it, or at least into artwork. They might have folded letters, or maybe they just scrolled at that point.
I saw that they folded stuff into like gold, paper gold nuggets, and then set them on fire as offerings to ancestors.
That's so maybe proto origami.
Yes, definitely proto.
But in the 6th century, Buddhist monks introduced paper to Japan. It was pretty rare and expensive here as well, and was used for, you know, special occasions and stuff like that. But as paper got a little more ubiquitous, then they decided that they could start folding it in interesting ways, and it wasn't a waste.
Right.
And it was affordable, I guess.
Yeah, as it became more affordable, folding became a lot more widespread. And as it became more widespread, people started doing kind of interesting things with it. Like you were saying, at first it was just kind of reserved for special occasions like weddings or there's one called the Shide, S-H-I-D-E. I was thinking of Sharday. Mm-hmm. And it's like a zigzag pattern that they use to kind of denote religious places or altars or something like that. And then somebody said, well, wait, you can make a frog out of this. Check this out. And I think origami kind of took off. And that's how it stayed, at least in Japan, for several centuries, where it was, they knew how to make a kite. They knew how to make a box.
Yeah.
They knew how to make cranes. Cranes were huge.
Sure.
And in fact, one of the first books on origami was called Folding 1,000 Cranes.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, Sambazuru Orikata, 1,000 Crane Folding. So that was a big deal already, all the way back in the 18th century. But finally, in the, I believe, the 1930s, I think around 1937, there was a guy whose name was Akira Yoshizawa. And you cannot talk about origami or paper folding or paper or folding or Japan or shoes without mentioning Akira Yoshizawa. This guy was he single-handedly took what it was a centuries-old school children's craft by this time, by the 1930s rolled around, that had been static for centuries, and said, I'm going to turn this into an art form, and he did.
Yeah, big time. And by this point, it was widely referred to as origami. I think in the late 1700s, it was still called orikata,
mm-hmm.
and that was from that that book about the 1,000 cranes. But by this time, it was origami, and he was a laborer for most of his life, and he was a hobbyist as far as origami went. But he started writing out these diagrams and basically sort of these how-tos. And if you've ever looked at an origami book or something online, you know, if you don't know how to do it, there's these very simple, depending on the ultimate model that you want to end up with, these diagrams that you can just follow along these lines and fold and just kind of copy what you're seeing. And he was the first person to do this and eventually publish these
mm-hmm.
in the 1950s in books. And it was a really big deal. Like, it was already a popular thing in Japan. Previous to that, it was actually in Spain and some other parts of Europe, thanks to the Silk Road. But it really sort of popularized it worldwide, I think, after his book.
Yeah, well, even before then, I think there was a magazine that celebrated, like, the new year by commissioning him to do, like, the 12 signs of the zodiac in origami.
Uh-huh.
They put it on their cover. And so you can imagine, for Japan, everything that had to do with origami was like, look at this kite. that our kid made and now it's hanging on our refrigerator, mm-hmm. To the 12 signs of the zodiac. And these things actually look kind of like a monkey, and the fox looks amazing. And it's just what this guy did just completely blew everybody away. And very shortly after that, he devised that system, started having exhibitions around the world, and became like this revered master of origami, like the first true origami artist, the one who said you can make an art form out of this. Mm-hmm. And he decided to live like this kind of poverty, I don't want to say poverty stricken, but he
poverty adjacent?
Poverty adjacent life. Very nice, Chuck. Where he supported himself selling soup door to door. He sold something called sukodani, which is like a kind of a seaweed condiment that you put on rice. He sold that door to door. And he just made enough money to support his habit of origami. That's what all he wanted to do. But what's amazing about him is he was like the preeminent origami artist for decades. He made at least 50,000 different models.
It's and amazing stuff, too.
It is. Just look him up right now, Akira Yoshizawa. And he never sold a single one of them. He would lend them out for exhibitions. He would give them as gifts, but he never made a dime off of his origami.
Yeah, and he's one of those that whose reputation reached a point where he literally could have gotten rich selling his models in the end.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But that's just, he just wasn't about that.
I love it. Very cool.
Very, like, it's very origami-esque.
Oh, yeah, totally. He's like, I'm not going to sell this stuff.
No.
That's not the point. And they were like, what about 10 grand for that rhinoceros?
Right?
He's like, meet me in the back
warmer.
Room. Meet me in the back room. Some of those animals, I mean, not just from him, but when you look up, you know, kind of the most amazing origami and there are a lot of animals and we'll talk about that, but it's really just astounding.
It is astounding. One of the ways that he was able to take origami from a kite, and I know I keep going back to a kite, but you know,
that's one of the base forms.
Kind of where it was at. Taking it from a kite to a, like he very famously made this, this gorilla. I think it's a gorilla that you almost always see in the background behind him. It's a.
It must not have been very good.
It's an ape of. It's either a gorilla or Tyrannosaurus Rex.
I thought you'd be like, yeah, it's either gorilla or a car.
Right, but when he makes something, you know exactly what it is. But one of the things about his particular kind of art was that it wasn't like every single detail is captured. People have taken it to that. Paper folders have gotten to the point where it's like that guy Michael LaFosse created a huge, easily 2-foot alligator, which is almost several meters, at least by my estimation, out of a single piece of paper. And it has all of like the armor, the scaly armor involved. Like there's a lot of detail. That's not what Yoshizawa was into. His was much more expressive and almost impressionistic, but you knew exactly what it was when you looked at it. And he was able to do this through a technique that he created called wet folding.
Yeah, and wet folding is how you can round things out. You're obviously wetting the paper. And that's how, or, you know, dampening it at least. You don't want to get it too wet. And you can manipulate it a little more, and you can round things out and make it look a little more like a sculpture. But I really liked his style. It wasn't
me too.
Because it didn't seem like, boy, I'm out to wow you and impress you with just something that's so detailed it'll blow your mind. They were detailed, but it wasn't like that other guy that you were talking about.
Michael LaFosse.
Yeah, which is, you know, they're both great, but it just seemed a little more intuitive and organic in terms of what Yoshizawa was doing, I think.
Yeah, his technique screams, oh, you like that? Not for sale.
Yeah. Get out of my kitchen. Right. And why were you here in the first place?
Exactly.
And they're like, I work for Time Magazine.
but help yourself to some soup that I sell door to door.
Exactly.
So I guess we should talk about, you know, if someone's listening to this, interest has been piqued and wants to know how to fold them, we should teach people, I think, Chuck.
Yeah. Well, we'll tell you the basics at least. There are, you know, many, many, many types of folds, but you mentioned the kite base or the kite fold, and I said that's one of the basics, and it is. There, you can oftentimes start from a base, which is just sort of your starting shape. That's your point where you start and then get more detailed from there. And there is the kite base, the fish base, the bird bass and the frog bass, and those are listed in order of difficulty from easy to hard.
There's a really great site called Paper Kawaii. It's spelled like Hawaii, but with a K. It means cute in Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who runs that site has made a huge depository of resources and instructional videos and diagrams and everything you could possibly want. But she says that there's 12 bases, or at least she instructs you on making 12 bases. So it gets even richer than those four.
Yeah, I mean, I got the picture that was the four most basic original bases. And
gotcha.
I was probably sure that there were more.
So there's some types of models that tend to pop up more often than others. And animals are frequently created. And like I was saying, like it's not necessarily you're going for ultra realism. It'd be impossible to make it ultra real. Because I don't know if we've said this yet. Like you're not supposed to use scissors or glue or tape or anything like that. And some people still use scissors every once in a while, but definitely you don't use glue or tape. That's not what's holding these together. These models are held entirely from different types of folds that you learn from doing origami. Like it's not just fold this direction, fold that direction. There's like reverse folds, there's sinks. There's all sorts of different and interesting stuff you can do to make the paper take a certain shape that you want it to, and then also to hold itself in shape permanently from that point on.
That's right. And there are a lot of ways that you can go about it. I would imagine that Yumi probably did it on like a coffee table or something maybe.
Oh, no, buddy. She'd do it in her lap.
Oh, okay. Well,
she can do it in the air.
Yeah. That is when you're at that point, then you're pretty skilled as an origami artist. If you are just using your hands and you are not putting it on anything hard, then that's pretty skilled. But I would say a beginner should probably use a desk or something.
Oh, yeah.
With a little help, maybe a clipboard if you want to do it in your lap. Sometimes people will use paper clips to help really get a nice fine crease in there.
Yeah, I got the impression that that's allowed.
Yeah, I mean, anything's allowed. Come on. I mean, anytime you're talking about something that Japanese people do, they're not going to go in there and start screaming at you.
Right,
if
right.
You know, like to do it right.
You may be at risk of dishonoring your ancestors, but nobody's going to judge you personally for it.
Yeah, but I would imagine a paperclip, too, might help if you don't have fingernails, if you're a fingernail biter and you just have just stubby nubs like I used to, then you should maybe get a little paperclip out. That might help you along.
I've also seen like a wooden letter opener kind of thing. I've seen people use that to make a really, you know, tight crease or to poke a fold into another fold, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Nothing.
Did I accidentally get sexy or something?
A couple of times. That's all right, though.
I got you. I got you. Well, let's just keep moving along.
So,
nothing to see here.
We should talk too about a few of the different categories of origami. There are many, many categories that you can focus on if you want to kind of drill down into a specific discipline. One is called modular origami, and that is when you have, and I would encourage people, obviously not if you're driving, but to kind of look up pictures and follow along with a lot of these because it really drives it home and it's also beautiful to look at.
Right.
But modular is when you use different sheets of paper, but you're generally kind of making the same shape and then bringing those together to form some larger piece from those same shapes. Very beautiful.
It really is. And with modular, Chuck, that's one of the few types of paper folding or origami that uses more than one sheet.
Right.
Well, what's mind-blowing about origami is when you're looking at just about any type aside from modular, despite what it looks like, it's probably just one sheet of paper.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
Some
of the stuff that people are making is just ridiculously amazing.
You've got action origami, which are kind of fun because these little guys can move sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's going to take human manipulation. They don't just move on their own. Like you can't make a wind-up toy or anything like that. But you can flap a bird wings sometimes, a bird's wing, or you might be able to make a frog that jumps.
Or remember the origami fortune teller, that little folded thing? You could learn who you're going to marry or that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. What was that called?
The origami fortune teller from what I saw.
I mean, we didn't call it that in elementary school.
No, and I could not find it. I could not find the name of it. I know what you're talking about.
Oh, gosh, what was it? Yeah, those were always fun.
There's something called MASH, Mansion Apartment Shack House.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that involves paper origami, but it's a similar game.
Yeah, that Janet Varney plays that with her guest at the end of her JV Club episodes, the MASH game.
Sure.
A lot of fun.
So that's different from the origami fortune teller.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with paper.
Yeah, you always end up married to Rob Lowe somehow, if you're lucky.
Well, that's called the fantasy game.
Let's see, what else can you do with origami, Chuck? People make origami out of dollar bills.
Yeah, I see those. I used to get those occasionally. If you work at a cash job, mm-hmm. like I worked at a convenience store, you're going to get some wiseacre that pays for cigarettes with a couple of cranes.
Some wiseacre. People make them out of sticky notes,
yeah.
like post-it notes is what most people call them. From what I saw, it basically just ends up being Pikachu every time.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's yellow and small, so yeah.
Jewelry, if you can make jewelry origami.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can certainly buy that kind of thing on Etsy.
And then one of the other styles that you see or schools is tessellations.
Yeah, these
I don't
are
know
cool.
if it's a school in and of itself, but it's kind of like modular origami where it yields like kind of repeating 3D patterns.
Mm-hmm.
But it's typically made from just one sheet folded in just not so intricate ways. I saw one, a 3D hydrangea pattern on this little sheet that the person in the picture is holding. It covers about the top half of their hand. But there's, I think, at least a dozen little hydrangeas folded into it in repeating
it's
rows.
Amazing.
It's just, and then when you step back and you think that is one sheet of paper, somebody figured out how to fold perfectly. Because there's one thing that they don't tell you about origami that you figure out pretty quickly on your own. If you don't make the right folds in the right order,
yeah,
you just screwed up. Like it's never going to look quite right.
Yeah, it's hard to undo a good crease.
I think that's where scissors come in sometimes.
Yeah. You know what I didn't do for this, which I usually do? I'm surprised. I'll do it later, is watch a good YouTube of someone doing something pretty complex.
Check out Paper Kawaii. She's good. And it's also easy to follow, too.
Yeah. Does she get super detailed and stuff, or is it a little more basic?
Both. It's basically everything you want. And then there's also like a lot of instructionals. Well, she teaches you basic shapes. I don't think she gets into like modular. Actually, it's not true. She does have modular stuff on there.
Right.
She does it all basically. But she's also got a lot of stuff where like if you want to make a little gift box to put your gift in, she's got instructionals on how to do that. So practical stuff as well.
So and you can put origami in an origami box as a gift.
You could. That's pretty mind-blowing.
It's amazing.
What's neat, though, is all of her videos are set to Led Zeppelin, so that adds, like, an extra layer.
Does it? Is it really?
No.
Oh, okay, man, I was like, that'd be amazing.
Especially if it was just really out of whack with what she was making, too. That'd be great.
Yeah, I was just thinking maybe, I can't think of it now. Come from the land of the ice and snow. What's that
Immigrant
one?
Song.
Immigrant song.
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, but none of the folding is keeping up with it. The song has to start over and over again.
Of course, if you're a fan of Blade Runner, you remember that has a nice origami motif, reoccurring motif in there with Edward James Olmos' character.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
You've seen Blade Runner?
Yeah, and I know the character, but what is that? Oh, does he keep making origami stuff and he leaves it behind?
That's right.
Okay, that's right.
And it plays a key role sort of at the end of the movie.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, it's good
that
stuff.
That is a great movie, though.
Sure
did
is.
Did you see the second one?
Well, I've seen all the versions of the first one, and of course, yeah, I saw the second one. I thought the second one was really great.
Yeah, it was very good.
I loved it.
And there's nothing that Ryan Gosling can't do.
I know, right? I saw him in a hotel lobby once, and I just wanted to kiss his handsome face.
Did you?
No, I should have.
Do you remember when we went to Upfronts once, when we had our show on uh-huh. Science Channel?
Yeah, that was fun.
We looked over, and there's Fred Armisen, and we waved like we were uh-huh. peers. And he waved back like, I don't know who you are, but hey, good to see you for the first time ever.
The other funny thing, I don't know if you remember this on that trip, was, and for people that know, the Upfronts is where you – if you have a TV show or something coming out the next year or quarter, is it yearly?
Yeah.
You gather at a place and all the press is there and you kind of just tell everyone what you're doing and they hopefully write about it. But we saw Michael Douglas and Matt Damon passed us walking down the sidewalk. And I was like, what are those guys doing together? And like, little did I know what was coming.
Man, that was such a good movie.
It was awesome. I'd like to see that again soon, actually.
Yeah. It's on, if you get a free trial to HBO on Amazon Prime, I think it's on there right now.
Oh, man, I got to see that. Such a good movie.
Let's see.
Technical Origami, I think, is where we left off.
Well, yeah, because we'd already talked about Pure Land, right?
Yeah, and this Technical Origami, from what I could gather, is this just the worksheets that you get, sort of the how-to, or is it an actual style?
It's kind of both. So I think the thing about the style is that the worksheets, the diagrams, mm-hmm. are not step-by-step. It is a picture of the paper with every fold in it. But it's like if you went through the whole process of making this incredibly detailed, very technically precise origami shape, and then unfolded it but left all the creases in there and then took a picture of that, mm-hmm. that's what the diagram is.
But that doesn't say which one to do first?
No.
Ugh.
Which I find very unnerving because
yeah,
that means
too.
That there are people out there who can look at that and tell how to do it just by looking at
that. Yeah, that's amazing.
And so in that documentary, Between the Folds, this is made back in 2008, I think, but they really kind of documented this tension between this push toward more and more technical origami and paper folding that's just pushing the limits and the boundaries of, like, what can you possibly do? That it started to use, like, CAD and other computer programs to plot out, you know, what folds you needed to make in what order to make these really technical ones. And then on the other side of that, pulling the other direction are the artists who are just like, I just listen to like my hands and my imagination and, you know, come up with these new folds. And there's this one French artist who makes masks and kind of almost Tolkien-esque from like a 70s illustrated version of like Lord of the Rings, maybe like witches and wizards and things like that.
Yeah.
And it's very like free form and flowing. And they're like, you know, when you get too technical, you lose like the emotion, you lose the art side of it. And then this one guy made the case, his name is Long. I can't remember his first name, but he's just an amazing technical guy. And he said, you know, no, these technical people are figuring this out. They're making studies of stuff that you could eventually incorporate into larger art. So it's good to have both.
Yeah. I don't think there's a wrong way.
I'm pretty sure his name is David Long. Check him out. He's just up to some amazing stuff.
All right. Well, let's take another break.
Okay.
And we're going to come back and finish up with a little bit on the kind of paper you might want to get if you want to try this out right after this. Hey everybody, Chuck here. Are you thirsty? Well, before you take a sip, have you stopped to think about what's in your water? Many conventional bottled waters contain PFAS, harmful substances known as forever chemicals.
Yeah, but you can drink water as clean as nature intended with Richard's Rainwater.
That's right. Richard's Rainwater collects 100% pure, refreshing drops of rain. Yes, it really is rain. Richard's Rainwater is caught clean before it hits the ground or becomes polluted with pesticides and contaminants that are commonly found in groundwater.
And since rain is naturally pure, there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. That means Richard's Rainwater contains no added fluoride, no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Just pure drops of rain.
That's right. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of Richard's still rainwater and the long-lasting cold pressured bubbles of Richard's sparkling rainwater. Perfect for sipping or mixing into your favorite cocktail. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. Enjoy pure, refreshing rainwater. Sip the sky. Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. And you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
Hey, Chuck, I looked and we did not ever do an episode on paper unless we named it in a smart aleck way, too.
What you writing on?
We did toilet paper.
Do you want to do one on paper?
Sure. All right. I think that'd be interesting.
Totally.
We did one on grass. We can do one on paper.
Oh, absolutely. And paper, like we said, is what you want to buy if you want to start practicing origami. Mm-hmm. And kami or koi paper is if you're not just, you know, if you want to step it up from just copy paper or something like that, and you go to an art supply store, this is a good place to start. It is designed for origami and paper folding. It is very crisp, very thin, holds its shape really well, very easy to fold, mm-hmm. and it stays pretty, it's pretty robust. Like after you fold it, it doesn't, you know, it stays pretty strong.
Yeah. That's like if you go to a stationery store and you look for origami paper, that's probably what you're going to get is that kami paper.
Yeah, it might have a nice pattern on it,
mm-hmm.
Usually square, and you can get it in different sizes from like sticky note size to granddaddy size.
Yeah. There's also another kind of paper called washi that is this – it's like thicker – obviously handmade. It might still have some of the grains from the pulp still mashed into it. And it is much harder to fold and keep like a tight crease in, but it's much better for using when you're doing like wet folding technique, which is where you, I don't know if we ever said, you dampen the paper. You don't get it wet, but you dampen it so that it folds more than creases, and then it'll hold that shape as it dries too.
Yeah, and it said in the article, which, by the way, came from HowStuffWorks.com, our old website, that it's very costly. And I looked it up, and I saw some, and it seems to me like you can't, like, if you want washi, it's coming from Japan. I saw some stuff on Amazon that they call washi paper, but it is not washi.
Oh, gotcha.
But
it's wishy.
Yeah, it's more wishy than washi. All right, Dad. And it was $50 for a roll that was 16 inches by 32 feet, though, which is...
Oh, okay.
Like $50 is a lot of money for paper, but 32 feet is not, you know, that's a lot of paper.
Sure. Yeah, that's nothing to see. That's a pretty good price on washi.
That's what I thought. you just turned into granddad.
Yeah. Pushed up my glasses as I said that.
What about the foil? That's another thing that I thought was kami, but they're two different things.
Yeah, it's so often called Japanese foil. It's just paper with a foil backing on one side, and the foil comes in different colors, so it can really make your origami paper crane pop.
Yeah, and you can bake cookies on it when you're done.
And you said something earlier about how kami might have like a pattern on one side or one color on one side and one color on another side. That actually fools a lot of people into thinking that they're looking at an origami model that's made from more than one type of paper.
Mm, sure.
But it's actually just two-sided paper that's just still one sheet. Like just remember this. When you're inevitably going and looking at pictures of origami today, most of that is just one big or small sheet of paper.
And the other cool thing here at the end, which I think we should mention, and this is very, very neat, is it is art and it is a hobby and it is zen-like, but mm-hmm. it has practical applications in the world at large. Like when you think about manufacturing things that need to be folded into a small space, where better to look than an origami master to say like, hey, how would you fold this airbag into this thing?
Right.
Or this solar array? Like, how can we make this large thing small, even if only for packaging?
And Yoshizawa's like, I've died. Leave me alone. I've given up origami years ago.
Didn't I tell you I hated money?
Right. But what about $10,000?
Is that the magic number for him?
I guess so. Everybody's got a price, even Yoshizawa.
And origami is great for the classroom, for younger kids to help teach geometry and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Really, really good stuff.
I got one more sweet Yumi story with origami. Her dad is in the hospital, has been for a while, and he was in ICU for a little while. And thanks to COVID, we couldn't visit, and we couldn't even send flowers. Like, they were super on lockdown trying to keep everything out. So she folded some paper flowers and sent them to him, and he had them on his bedside, or at his bedside with him, which he said he credits 100% for helping him get well.
Oh, that's amazing. And they allowed that, huh?
They did. No flowers, but paper flowers is okay.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Folded by human hands.
Exactly. Very clean human hands, I can assure you.
That. Sure. I mean, yeah. I'm glad they allowed it. That's great.
So, by the way, Bob, we are wishing you here at Stuff You Should Know a good and healthy recovery, and we'll see you home soon.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Chuck. If you guys want to know more about origami, you can start looking it up. Get yourself some paper. That's another thing we said that I think we should point out. You don't have to have kami or washi or foil or anything like that. You can use copy paper to start if you want. Whatever's handy. Just go ahead and have some fun with it. That's the point. Have some fun. And since I said have some fun, it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this Sexy Sneeze. Remember when we talked a little bit at the end of the sneezing episode about sneezes being linked to orgasms and sexual pleasure and arousal?
Yes.
Well, we heard from Darcy about that. She said, "Hey, guys, I'm an avid listener. I've been listening to all of your episodes, and this is the first time I've ever thought I really should send them an email about this. I'm trying to keep it family-friendly, but in your discussion during sneezing, was sneezing when becoming sexually aroused? In my case, my nose becomes very runny, and I often do the my nose is running sniff thing during amorous activities. I don't always end up sneezing, but I can tell you that there's a direct link in my body from my nose to other areas." And she said, the uncensored version is, "I know it's been a good time when my nose starts running." Anyway, just wanted to share my experience. Keep on finding stuff to talk about, and I'll keep listening. And that is from Darcy. And she did say I could read this and just use her first name.
Thanks a lot, Darcy. That's very brave of you. You're not even in an internet chat room and you're admitting it.
That's right.
It's way to go.
Interesting stuff.
It really is. If you want to be like Darcy and write in something interesting about yourself, we want to hear it. You can send it off to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey, everybody, are you thirsty? Well, sip on pure, refreshing Richard's Rainwater. Yes, it's really rain, caught clean before it hits the ground. Rain is naturally pure, so there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. Richard's Rainwater contains no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of Richard's still rainwater or the long-lasting and cold-pressured bubbles of Richard's sparkling rainwater. Visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. Sip the sky. Hey there, everybody. Here's some bonus stuff you should know. This time it's about traveling to Orlando for business. Orlando has tons of places to host your conferences and meetings. Dr. Michael Edwards, CEO of Ocean Insight, said it best. Orlando is as much a business capital as an entertainment one. And when the day is done, you can kick off each evening at one of 46 Michelin-rated restaurants. What's not to love? So check out Orlando, where the possibilities for business travel are unbelievably real. Learn more at OrlandoForBusiness.com.